Okay, good evening. I just wanted to speak briefly tonight about a topic that's related to Purim and also somewhat related to the situation, and that is the war matzav, and it has to do with the special circumstances of war overall and sakana to Klal Yisrael. And that is what essentially could be called the Esther question. And the issue of, is there a difference in halacha and in terms of the standards for Hatzalah and Pikuach Nefesh when the risk is not just to an individual or even a group of individuals, but to Klal Yisrael as a whole? And that is a question which we find a discussion about in Poskim, and some Rishonim and Achronim taking stances on, and just wanted to discuss that for a few minutes and to share some perspectives on that and what that could be about. So we know that in general, there is a halacha of Yehari Val Yavor, which tells us that there are certain things that we're not allowed to do, even at the cost of our lives. So normally, if somebody is threatening my life, so I'm allowed to kill that person who's a rodef, but I'm not allowed to kill a person who's innocent, who's not chasing after me. And even if that means that I'm going to die otherwise, so this is a halacha of Yehareg Val Yavor, and I'm not permitted to save my life at the expense of the Avera of Ritzicha or of Gilui Arayos or of Avodah Zarah. That's the din of Yehareg Val Yavor. So the question is, we find that that's true even if we are talking about not just one individual, but a group of individuals. And that shows us that, especially if we're talking about, let's say, Ritzicha, where you might think that you can make a good case, that that's not a logical principle, that you should be able to say, well, I should be able to apply the math here and say, all right, I can understand when it comes to one person, so then the rule should be that I don't know that it's preferable to save the person who I'm saving at the expense of this person's life. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has the expression, "My chazus to dami dudan samachi tvei dami dudach, dami dudach samachi tvei dami dudan." How do you know that your life is more valuable than his life? So okay, so I can't make that calculation, but we see that it's true in an absolute sense because the Tosefta in Trumos in Parag Zayin Halacha Chav Gimel tells us that if there's a group of people that are approached by a gang of marauders and they say, turn over one of you and we'll kill him. And if you don't, then we're going to kill all of you. So then you have to let all the group get killed. And you cannot turn over any one of them. The assumption being here that turning over one person would make you an accomplice to murder, and that would essentially be an act of ritzicha. And if they singled out one person, such as Tosefta mentions a comparison to Sheva ben Bichri, so then you can turn him over, but if not, then they have to all be killed. And in the Yerushalmi, so there is a machlokus, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, as to how to understand this exception. Rabbi Shlakish says that he has to be Chayiv Miso like Sheva ben Bichri, and Rabbi Yochanan says even if he's not Chayiv Miso. And the Rambam
and Hilchos volunteer.
And the Rambam, so that's the discussion. So the Rambam and Hilchos Yesodei Torah paskins like Reish Lakish that he has to be Chayiv Miso. So without getting in right now to the exception specifically, but what we see here is that we have essentially an absolute rule, apparently, that we have a rule of Yehari Val Yavor, essentially in a formalistic way, that we're not allowed to kill someone even to save your life, and even if it's going to be mathematically advantageous, even if you're going to save many people, we're not allowed to do it, even if there'll be a net benefit. And even if it's clear that it'll be a net benefit because the person who is at risk is included. The person who you'd be turning over is included in the group of people who are being threatened. So it's clearly going to be a net benefit to turn this person over. Nonetheless, you're not allowed to do it. So apparently that's because there is an absolute isser of ritzicha in a formalist way, and to turn him over would be an act of ritzicha. And we say, yeharig v'yavor, even though it's clear that there'll be a net benefit to doing so. However, apparently there is an exception when it's not just a matter of greater numbers, but when it's about Klal Yisrael. So this is something that we find in Rishonim and Achronim. And for example, it shows up in the Maharik. And the Maharik is mentioning this Agav, but he's mentioning it actually as a point l'chumra, but in the context of making a point l'chumra, so he stresses this point very strongly, because he's talking about Esther, and he's trying to make a point that the prohibition of a woman to her husband, if she has an affair, is not necessarily a function of the Aveira. And he's talking about whether it would make a difference if she's a shogeg or a mezid. And he wants to make the point there that it would be true even if it happened b'shogeg. And to make the point, he says it would be true even if it was totally mutter. What's the case where it's totally mutter? So he says, you see, it's true by Esther, because the Gemara says in Megillah, darshining the pasuk, kasher avadati avadati, that makes a reference, that's understood to refer to the fact that she would become prohibited to her husband Mordechai because of the relationship to Achashverosh. So that indication that she would indeed become usher to Mordechai, says the Maharik, that's despite the fact that she went willingly to Achashverosh. And he goes on to say there that there's absolutely no Isser whatsoever. Why? Because she had Seila Kol Yisrael, because she's saving the entire Jewish people. And then he goes on to say that presumably she must have had Ruach HaKodesh, and she must have known that this was the right thing to do, and there's no question that there couldn't have possibly been anything wrong about this. But the thrust of what he's saying is that this is because of the need to save Klal Yisrael. And he also makes a reference to earlier Rishonim, who said this about Yael also, and the Gemara Maseches Nazir and Daf Chav Gimel, which talks about the concept of Avera Lishma, which essentially is the notion that sometimes it's necessary to do an Avera for the right reasons, and that's considered to be, in certain circumstances, praiseworthy. So you see from there, he says, if it's true about Yael, all the more so it's true about Esther. So he emphasizes this point that you see that there is nothing wrong with it. And nonetheless, the Gemara still says she's usher to Mordechai. So that's the main point he's making, that the usher is still there. The prohibition to her husband is still there, even though the act that she did in saving Klal Yisrael was mutter. So there you have one of the Hayav V'Yavors. And nonetheless, it becomes mutter in that case to do. The language of Isser is a little confusing here. The action became permissible to do, even though it created a status of Isser on her afterwards, but the action itself was mutter to do, because it was l'hatzalus Klal Yisrael. So apparently there's a difference between what is prohibited to do to save your own life, and is still prohibited to save many lives, but when it comes to saving Klal Yisrael, apparently it's mutter. So the issue of just a question of many people versus Klal Yisrael comes up in later sources also, because there was a question regarding other aspects of Gilui Arayos. The Shvas Yaakov has a tshuva where he wrote that he thought it was mutter for an Eishes Ish to give herself over to Bia Asura to save her husband and other people from being murdered. And he based this on the Maharik, and he said she would become prohibited to her husband, but he thought that the action was mutter. And the Noda Behuda argued with this, And he said that, no, that's still considered to be Yehari Vel Yavor. And therefore, for her to voluntarily do this would still be an act of Gilui Arayos if it was forced upon her. So that's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, that as far as Maisa B is concerned, she's considered to be passive. But if she volunteers to do this, so then that would be considered an act of Gilui Arayos. But you can't compare this to Esther, he says, because Esther is different, because that was for Atzolos Klal Yisrael Mehodu V'Yad Kush. So you can't compare the Hatzola of Yechidim, and here by Yechidim he means more than one Yachid, but still it's not Hatzolos Klal Yisrael, to what Esther did, that was everybody Mehodu V'Yad Kush. And he also adds there that that was the Hora of Mordechai in Beis Dino, and also probably Ruach HaKodesh. So that is different. So in general, there is a machlokus then to extend from this particular Yehari Yavor to the other Yehari Yavor of Pikuach Nefesh, of giving up one's life in order to save the lives of others. So that was a discussion that the Or Samech and the Mesha Chachma in a few places took the position that one is not supposed to risk his own life to save the life of another. That's a discussion in general. And he assumes that that's true even if it's multiple lives. And he bases this on a halacha in Hilchos Ritzeach that says that a person who is a Ritzeach B'shogeg and therefore has to go to an Ir Miklat in order to avoid being killed by the Goel Hadam is supposed to stay there, and even if all of Israel needs him to be rescuing them, like Yoav ben Tzruya, he still doesn't leave. And if he does, then he is responsible for his own life. So the Or Sameach comments on this, that why shouldn't he leave? What about Pikuach Nefesh, Doches HaKol? And don't we see that from Esther? So it says, you see from here that that's not a reason to enter into a sarkana. And he says that also in his Sefer and Chumash, the Mesha Chachma, that you see that when Moshe Rabbeinu was told that he should go back to Mitzrayim, ki mesu kol hanashim hamavakshim es nashacha. So you see that if the people who were still alive who were looking to kill him, but apparently he wouldn't have had to go back. So apparently you don't have to endanger your life even to save all of Klal Yisrael. So apparently, concludes Rebbe Meir Simcha, both in the Or Sameach and in the Mesha Chachma, that you don't have to risk your life, you're not supposed to risk your life even for Hatzolos HaRabim. And the Kli Chemda, in his Sefer on Parshas Pinchas, he disagrees with this very strongly, that to say this, that you shouldn't enter into a suffix sarkana to save Klal Yisrael, he says, how could that be? He says, it's clear that you can violate even Yisuri Torah to save all of Klal Yisrael, and that we learn from Esther, and certainly you can enter into a suffix sarkana, and that should be quite clear. So that's a machlokus on this point, and goes to this issue of how much you can learn from Esther to adapt the parameters of the halacha for the sake of the rabbim, and especially for Hatzolos Klal Yisrael. And then the question becomes, what about specifically in a war context? And should that be different? And we know that in general, the halacha is different when it comes to war. And we find the parameters different when it comes to war, both in terms of the obligation to enter into a sakana and also the justification to kill the opponents. And the question is, why exactly do we have these differences in terms of halacha? And there are various explanations, and Rav Kook has a lengthy tshuva about this in the tshuva of Mishpat Cohen in Siman Kuf Mem Gimel, where he understands this to be a function of the Mishpat HaMelech, of the extra legal heterim that are given to the king to make decisions based on what's necessary for the maintenance of society. The Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he connects this to a similar idea but slightly different to the principles of Dina D'Malchusa Dina. And just like the people accept the authority of the government in order to regulate their affairs, even to the point of sometimes risking their lives so that they can make a living, so too that allows them to be sent to war also. So that's also a part of the whole process of how they regulate their lives. So all of that could explain to a certain extent how there is the notion of a concept of going to war and stretching the parameters of what's normally permitted. So we have this whole discussion of how it is that war has different principles of halacha and expectations in these two areas. So one way of understanding it is that we see the individual as a part of the klal, and we look at it as defined by the klal. So that could be, but I think there's also a different aspect here, and it may be that this really connects to the principle that we're talking about. That in general, so when we talk about ethics and morality, and you find this within halacha also, so sometimes we have what we call consequentialist rules, that we're allowed to make decisions based on the result. And sometimes we have formalist principles, where we have to live by absolute rules, and we're not allowed to say the ends justify the means. And in general, the rules of Yehari Vayavar are formalist rules, that we're not allowed to say the ends justify the means, we have to live absolutely. So Ritzicha, in general, is a formalist rule. And that's what we see from the principles of Maichazis and the Yerushalmi Trumas, that even when you're going to save more lives, you can't violate the Yisr Ritzicha. So in general, we have this formalist principle, and you have to give up your life for the value of not violating the Yisr Ritzicha. The problem is, when you're dealing on a national, global level, so you have to be able to make consequentialist decisions. Because it's one thing to tell an individual that you have to be moser nefesh for a value, because then the rest of the world will at least still continue, and the Am will still continue. But when you're dealing with the existential crisis to the nation as a whole, so then it's not shaykh to say that you can't make consequentialist decisions and that you have to sacrifice the whole nation. And that's what seems to be reflected here in this principle that the Rishonim understood intuitively, that Hatzolus Kal Yisrael Shaini, that to say that there's a difference between even many Yechidim and Klal Yisrael, to say that there's something that changes once you go to all of Klal Yisrael, I think is essentially a source for that idea, that when we're talking about everyone, then that's different than just saying the math adds up and that you'll save a lot of lives, so it's consequentially worth it. Then that's fundamentally different. And there you have to be able to say that the ends justify the means when it's enough. So I think that explains why in wartime you can make different decisions that a yachid would never be entitled to make. And you can therefore also make decisions that involve collateral damage and loss of innocence and the like, because you have to act in service of the greater good. Doesn't mean that you can act wantonly, but it means that that's a part of the consideration. And therefore also the idea that certain other averos could be tolerated when they wouldn't be tolerated for an individual or even for many individuals, because the idea of the ends justifying the means on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael is perhaps something that might be able to be understood. And the idea that that is part of the cheshbon of Mohammed, that might be able to also help us understand the notion of Mohammed Sarishus, which is a very difficult idea to understand and the Svarim struggle with, that it's hard enough to understand what it means have milchama in general, but the idea that there could be a milchama that is voluntary, if that's how you would translate it, is a tricky idea, and especially it's a Gemara in the beginning of Pesachos Brachos, which seems to suggest that David HaMelech authorized the Mohammed for economic reasons. And that's a very difficult kind of concept, because both the idea that obtaining Parnassa through Mohammed seems difficult from an ethical perspective, and also the idea that going to war for anything less than pikuach nefesh reasons seems difficult. So if we understand that the whole cheshbon of war is about not just the immediate pikuach nefesh, but also looking at the long run kind of picture and what will save the people in the long run, so then that may also include the kind of considerations that are more about the overall ends justify the means. And in that situation, some of the Achronim explain that Magolius Sayyam in his Sefer on Sanhedrin, and also in his Sefer Nitzutzayor on the rest of Shas, and the Tshuvas Chemdas Tzvi has a hasber like this also, where they explain that it wasn't Stam that David HaMelech was saying, go conquer the property of other nations, but that there already was a threatening nation that was circling them and that was interfering with their ability to do business and their whole economic activity. And therefore the question was, so they're eventually going to be going to war with you, and now can you go to war with them in order to be able to preserve your economic viability? So it wasn't Stam for the sake of Parnassa, but because this was also a part of the longer process of war. So also the idea that the Rishonim talk about, that idea of a Mechemes Rishus could also be a preemptive strike in order to diminish the threatening forces so that they shouldn't be able to strike you later. So as a Yachid, you wouldn't be able to do that when you want to try to stop an individual from fighting you. Because again, from a formalist perspective, that wouldn't justify that kind of aggression. But when dealing with a national consideration, the viability of a nation requires that you have to be able to make consequentialist decisions. And perhaps that's what we see from this intuitive svara of Hatzalas Klal Yisrael Shaini. So perhaps that's a lesson that is derived from Esther, and that may be a principle that is relevant for war as a whole. And right now, as Klal Yisrael is involved in this existential war at Purim time, we should be zocher that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should once again give us Nisim and Yeshuas, and should no longer be the Gela Maisa of the Karev B'Yameinu.